This is tape two of the Jack Thompson interview. When the last tape ended, we were talking, or you were talking about student employees and having to teach them how to work.
Okay. So that, then the next, very recently, it's hard to get student employees because there's so much concern about the, you know, the cost of education, that they're putting so much money in education that the students are getting by without having to work because mm-hmm. they're getting, you know, scholarships and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to get students to work now. Mm-hmm. The residence halls in the last few years have had to hire part-time people to do the jobs that the students were being hired for.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So, and you find this also in, you know, like say McDonald's, mm-hmm. that they have a hard time getting people to work because, you know, the students aren't working anymore.
The union activities, were you involved or affected in that?
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, in 1960, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees came in to unionize the non-academic employees. And I got interested in it. I don't know why. Well, because I was interested in employees. The people I worked with have always been very important to me. They, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're the salt of the earth. These people, you know, the people that do the laundry or mop the floors or make the salads or whatever. Yeah, these are very great, good people for me. And so the union came in, we're going to unionize these people, and I thought, well, I wanted to get involved with it, so I helped organize it. And when in the elections, I was elected vice president of the local American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. My name is on the charter hanging on their office yet. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I would go in there and check it. Anyway, and then the then elected president left the university, and so I was vice president. I became president, and I finished out the term as president. And that was great fun.
That was the early
1960.
Okay.
1960.
How did the administration did they fight the union, or did they not want the workers to be unionized, or what did you encounter?
They didn't really know what to do for the most part. Henry Foster was fine, you know, if that's what you want to do, you know, that's what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Henry Foster and I had a long talk about this, he asked to talk to me about it, and so we went to his office and we had a long talk about it, you know, and he was not against it. He was, you know, that's fine if the employees want to, unionize, that's their business. Mm-hmm. The university hadn't recognized before I had gotten out of it. So, and then the next year, I was promoted from head chef at Brody to a food supervisor, you know, so I wasn't.
You weren't in the union.
In the union.
Okay.
But I did help organize the next one, the supervisors union later on.
Mm-hmm. What were the issues in the 1960? Was it wages, benefits,
I don't think
work
were.
Conditions, or?
No. Mm-hmm. I think wages probably, if anything. And the union has to find things, even if they're not there, mm-hmm. you know, to organize it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there was much dissension among the employees.
Mm-hmm.
No, I really don't. I think they just thought, well, let's organize.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there was no bad feelings towards the university mm-hmm. by the employees.
You didn't feel any repercussions?
No. And then later on, a few years later, the union was recognized by the university.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think Bob Underwood probably talked to you about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've been interested in this because this obviously is a development of the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Since the 1955 and the centennial of the university.
Yeah.
It's a major portion in the attempts to organize the faculty also occurred during this time, even though not successfully.
Right, so, and the students.
So, student, and the students, that's, right? That's ongoing or recent?
That was ongoing. That was back in the 60s. There's, you know, the student employees, they were talking about organizing, but mm-hmm. the students didn't want to bother. I mean,
they weren't here long enough.
They weren't here long enough, yeah, and they weren't on the job that mm-hmm. long enough. They couldn't get them organized.
Mm-hmm. How did you have any direct contact with any of the presidents? All of them.
All of them.
Could you talk a little bit about your...
It's my job as serving state. I took on myself to interview each president.
Okay.
John Hanna, Clifton Wharton, very, very interesting man to interview.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Hardin was only here as interim president, but he was somebody I knew anyway because he had come out of Michigan State University and uh-huh. was president up north, and then he came down here all of them, and as well as Mrs. Mackey. I decided I was going to interview the president's wife, so I interviewed Mrs. Mackey, and that was great fun.
Uh-huh. What was the focus of that interview?
Just kind of where she, you know, where she was from, where she'd mm-hmm. grown up, what she had done as...
Mrs. Claire Mackey, right?
Claire Mackey, yeah. Yeah.
And was she from Michigan originally, or...?
Yeah, I believe she was as a member. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where was she? He wasn't, but she, yeah.
Right.
But and she was a singer, that uh-huh. you know, which was interesting to me. And then she gave me a tour of Cole's house.
Uh-huh.
Want to know something about Cole's house?
Sure.
Okay. There was originally there was some were faculty row there with different professors that had houses. And what is now Cole's house was one of the houses. And then right after the war, when they were doing reconstruction, they put a big, tall fence all over. You couldn't see through all around this one house. And when they took the fence down, there was Cole's house. Mm-hmm. And Madison Kuhn told me that he went through that fence and they knocked everything down except maybe a couple of the walls. So, you know, what is there wasn't really part of it. Just part of it, you know, very little of it was original. Mm-hmm. And the money had, there was a people in Lansing named Jennison that gave money to the university to build Jennison Field House. Mm-hmm. And money that was left over, the university built Cole's house from it. Cole's was Jennison's mother, her maiden name.
I see.
And it's pronounced Cole's, not mm-hmm. Cowles.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had told, or was talking about the Cole's family, so.
Mm-hmm. So you knew it from that?
I knew that.
That
I learned that at my mother's knee.
Of your other colleagues, are there any that should be part of the record? Who are some of those most memorable that you worked with closely?
I want to talk about presidents.
Go back. Talk about President Hanna.
John Hanna was John Hanna. I mean, mm-hmm. he was beyond everybody else. He was one that built the campus from a little thing up to a big thing. It may be because he had to be the president here at the time, but you know, if he had been president some other time and this opportunity, you know, he might have been unheard. But he, you know, he was a great man. There's no question about that. And the saying was, you know, that the concrete never sits on Uncle John's campus. You know, and they said he would get money from the legislature to for a building, and he said he'd start three of them, then have to go back to get the rest of the money to finish them. I mean, right. That's what they said. But to me, the greatest president was Clifton Warren Jr. Because I think he had everything in balance. And he, you know, Uncle John left the university just when things were getting bad. Clifton Warren came in, you know, during all of the eruptions. But I think he had things in balance. He had sports and where it belonged. Education was the main thing to him. You know, he knew the politics of it. To me, he was the greatest president. I think John DiBiagio could have been as great, but the board of trustees, you know, tried to manage, micromanage the university. The sports was too important to them. And it was, to DiBiagio, I think, education was what this university was about. And so, you know, the Perlis thing, where he didn't want Perlis to be head of the sports director, mm-hmm. and the football coach, and he was overruled. Mm-hmm. You know, and so instead of letting DiBiagio be president, you know, they wanted to be, and so I think that's why he left.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back to Horton a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
And how did he treat staff?
Very well. Mm-hmm. He was. John Hanna had a reputation for being, you know, always you see him on campus. Well, I was always on campus from a little kid up to, you know, all the time. I went to classes here, I worked here, I went to concerts here, I did things with my friends here. I never saw Uncle John on campus. Mm. Wharton, you'd see him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd see him on the, mm-hmm. you know, I'd be down bowling, you know, doing different things. He was known for he had a saying, he said something, I don't know if it's saying, but that, you know, what's important, that the people that working on the serving lines of the cafeteria are important people. And he meant it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and we remembered this because this made everybody feel good. Mm-hmm. And he meant it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. You had dealings with almost all those presidents then, and since Horton.
I interviewed all of them. Mm-hmm.
Up through President McPherson,
including President McPherson.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I found President McPherson very businesslike. I found Ed Hardin very old hat guy. You know, old shoe guy. Yeah. Interesting that when I went to interview Ed Hardin, he was behind his desk. He came out from behind his desk, and we sat at a table. And I noticed this because this is what I always, you know, like to do. I don't like to supervise behind the desk. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody, you know, came in for something, I didn't want to had the desk in between me and the, and it was very interesting when I went to Wilson, and when I moved the desk so you couldn't get in, so when you came in you had to sit beside it, you know, you couldn't, and the boys would come in, they'd try to get in behind that desk.
Uh-oh. They wanted to be in front of it.
They used to have that desk between them.
Uh-huh.
But if you do it, you're kind of like a judge, I always felt.
Oh, that's interesting.
This is what I learned from probably the best manager that I worked for was Marion Emerson, mm-hmm. who was food manager at Brody when I was a cook and a supervisor. Mm-hmm. Marion Emerson was one of those people that really the employees wanted to do for her because they wanted to do it for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not because they had, not because they had to. There was no employee in that place had anything against her.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know why, it's just a personality. But any employee there would have done anything for her. And she was kind of the last of that type. As the younger ones came along, they were less interested in the employees. They were less interested, you know, like she was, less interested in doing things for the university like Emory Foster was. His concern was not to make Emory Foster look good, but to do something, you know, to further the university. The later ones came along, their concern was, what are you going to do to make me look good?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. When you first came here, as even before a real official employee helping your father, did you anticipate that you'd have your whole career here at Michigan State?
No way.
Uh-huh.
No, even when I started part-time, I never thought I would be here for 53 years.
Uh-huh.
No.
So what year did you ultimately retire?
1999. Yeah, September 1999.
Okay. So for 53 years, was that a record?
That's the record, yeah.
That is the record.
That's the record. Uh-huh. Tom Dutch is going to get 52 years.
Uh-huh. So what did you do to convince him so that you keep the record?
Tom Dutch and I are old friends. He's another one very important person in this university. Probably over the years the most well-known person in the university. I mean, the presidents come and go and you see paper. Tom Dutch is somebody everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Tom Dutch, everybody knows him. I first met him when he was a student working at Shaw. I was a cook and he was a student working there. And I knew him over the year, you know, he became a friend. He had a job after graduation, was the housing officer or something like that for the university or for the college then, mainly off-campus students, you know, making sure that the houses were
the up to code,
right? Yeah, which I had mentioned when I lived on Bogue Street in East Lansing. After we moved from Trowbridge, I lived on Bogue Street right at the end of Unit, right across from Mason Abbott Snyder Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big house there, and we had student roomers. As our family got smaller, as you know, people left, we could get more students. So I, and one of, you know, and so, okay. And when I was working at Snyder Phillips, you know, I'd roll out of bed and I'd be to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You didn't have far to go.
No, okay. But so I knew Tom Dutch, you know, over the years, and, you know, I'd see him once in a while. And then when the job he had was eliminated for some reason, he came over to Brody as the manager. Mm-hmm. And I was working there as a cook, you know, so I was working for him, and he was a grand person to work for. I wouldn't tell him that, but everybody who works for Tom Dutch, mm-hmm. you know, likes to work for Tom Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left there, and he went somewhere else as manager. And then when I was over serving state at Homesaw, working out of Homesaw as editor during serving state, that was under the personnel administrator. Well, in a couple of years, he came over as personnel administrator. So, you know, I was working directly for him.
Yeah. So your career is intertwined quite a bit.
Right. In some number of years, you know, I was working directly for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just great to work for. I mean, mm-hmm. And then also, when he, and both of us always walked to work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'd often see each other. But then when he came over to Holmes as personnel administrator, he lives just about, you know, 6 blocks from me. So his route then changed to walking to work by my house.
Oh.
So we walked to work together for 25 years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So what was it, do you think, that kept you here all these years?
It was just a good place to work. Lots of reasons. Good place to work. It was, especially, you know, the first many years. It gradually got not so good, but it was, and also it's a good, great place to be, a university. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, the culture. If I want to go to a concert, you know, here they. And another thing is with the academic climate here, the professors that I did a story in Serving State about food waste, and narrowed it down to a cookie. How many, you know, cookies, somebody didn't eat their cookie. And we counted, you know, how many cookies were eaten in one day in one hall, and we figured out how many weren't eaten in the whole university, and how many were wasted. And this did sad things, you know, if you piled them up on top of each other, they would be, you know, almost as high as Beaumont Tower. But then the other things, I called George Bergstrom, I think, in food nutrition. He was a top, around the world well known in this. I asked him, you know, how much food energy, how much energy, you know, or how many people could you feed with these, with the energy from these cookies? I mean, I can talk to this guy, a world famous nutritionist.
Mm-hmm.
I called Malcolm Trout about, you know, how many cows did it take to get the milk to make this? You know, Malcolm Trout was a well known dairyist.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. And then when I was over in Holmes Hall, Lana Biggs school, college then school, if I had a question about something, I'd go down there, could go and ask one of the professors, you know, about, you know, if I just was interested in it. We used to eat lunch together, you know, the people who were there and the professors, we always eat lunch together. And another incident, that when you're with a printing press, you have to be with a real high professional ones, you have to be concerned about the acidity of the water. It's something we weren't concerned about, but we got interested in it. So the chemistry professor, Steve Spies, came down, checked, you know, how much, checked the acidity of the water. One knows something about, you know, something with math. The math professor, you know, I'd ask him, this is always, this is something people don't know about when you're working for a university, that how much knowledge you've got, you can get from, you know, the people around you.
Mm-hmm. The faculty resource.
Faculty people, yeah.
Yeah.
And these are with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people, the people doing the cleaning over Lyman Briggs are great friends with the professors there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, personally, these people are picking up educations about that.
Mm-hmm. So that concept of the living learning that developed here, you see as a real positive thing?
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they have classes in the room, in where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're very close to the professors.
Uh-huh. In those particular colleges. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What were some of the other community activities you got involved in? Obviously, you were
You don't want to know. Where shall I start?
Yeah. The community. Yeah, just kind of preview. Okay. Some of the things you've obviously been, you've been active in the community, both before retirement and then obviously after too. What would you list as some of those things that you spent your spare time?
My interest for many, many years has been in local history. So I was with the Historical Society of Greater Lansing. I was in that. I have various offices in that. I helped start the Friends of the Turner Dodge House. It's a house in Lansing that was an old, large house that was owned by one of the big families here. That the city now owns. It's under Parks and Recreation. I helped get that friend started there when the city took it over. Mm-hmm. And I was the first president of that. I was the Downtown Cultural Committee, which was under the Chamber of Commerce.
East Lansing?
Lansing.
Oh, Lansing.
Lansing,
okay.
Downtown, yeah. It's Greater Lansing. Greater Lansing. And that got really, there was a woman named Paula Johnson was in charge of that. It was a staff person. And she got to know, it was during the bicentennial, or the U.S. bicentennial, there was a lot of interest of history, and a lot of groups were formed, really didn't have anything to do with the bicentennial, but local history groups. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were helped started by the Greater Lansing, Historical Society of Greater Lansing helped did seating for a lot of them. So there were a lot of people knew each other in this area of local history. And then Paula Johnson was one of them. So when she was starting this, she brought a lot of, the people together. Geneva Whiskeyman, myself.
Was Justin Kestenbaum involved?
Justin Kestenbaum,
uh-huh.
Another old friend of mine. Justin was, and so it was a very high-powered committee because a lot of high-powered, and it was a committee. It wasn't just people sitting around, just to be there. They were very electric,
mm-hmm.
A lot of ideas in the air. Bob Bulk was the chair of, and he was with LCC in advertising. LCC was the chair of first, I think he, or no, I'm not sure, anyway, it was kind of, anyway, second year I was the chair of that. In both years we brought in Art Train. Art Train is owned by the state that it, it's a train that they have had a lot of art displays in the cars, and they take it to different cities. And now they're
traveling exhibit.
Traveling, yeah. Now so they take it. We don't see it much here, but it's all over the country, and mm-hmm. It's still going. But so I was the chair of that for 1 year.
Mrs. Wharton was involved in that, wasn't she?
Who?
Mrs. Wharton.
Yes, Dolores Wharton was involved in it. Yes, she was, come to think of it, yeah. The bicentennial was also, as the bicentennial, a lot of involvement in that, and she was quite involved in the bicentennial. Mm-hmm. And then when the Kurt Dewhurst at the MSU Museum wanted to start a group for the museum, then I was the president for the first year of that to get that started. And I one of the things I would do is put together the newsletter, and put it together, and I'd even print it from over in our printing press.
Mm-hmm. That was MSU Associates?
Museum Associates. And that was, what else was, and there were different art things that we would do. The State Journal and the City of Lansing Parks and Recreation every year would have a youth talent exhibit that from all over the area, the kids would bring in, things they've made, drawn, painted, graphics, and I was a graphics judge for that for many years. But then the State Journal dropped it. But it was a lot of artwork from outlying areas. That seemed to be most, City of Lansing didn't seem to have it, but you'd see, teachers, art teachers in outlying areas would get their kids to do things and bring them in. It was a big show they'd have.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your interest in music and art was, which you expressed in your first course.
Oh, yes.
It seems like that.
Yes.